He is the author of A New Approach to Deeper Love and Less Conflict. Oh, my God. My sexy girlfriend and I are not getting along. Dr. Tim is going to hook me up.
Oh, this is Dr. Tim McCarthy.
Oh, my God, you sound so great. I'm so excited. If that's the hello we're having live on the air across America, AM/FM stations, Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network, I've been chatting about you for the last 20 minutes. Because
have you?
I haven't told you as much about my need for your book. I'm acting like this is for the audience. Oh, sure, let's do this for the public. Meanwhile, you could spend a year on me, and I'm telling you, you'd have a second book. You're really a miracle worker. We met for a couple of seconds, and I got a couple of vibes off of you at the summit in New York. But this, I've been looking, this is going to be a good session for me. Dr. Tim McCarthy, welcome to the Ed Till Show. As I've mentioned a couple of times, the title of the book almost says it all. This is exactly what we're going to talk about. A New Approach to Deeper Love, Less Conflict. It's relationship co-coaching, which you defined for me. I think that was my first question. What is co-coaching? Welcome to the show. All of America needs your help, including the host of the show. Go for it. Well, tell me all about it. I'm ready. I've got nothing but anticipation.
Well, thank you for that that excitement. Well, you know, actually, I at times feel very excited about it myself. Just the backdrop, I had been doing marriage therapy for 28 years until 5 years ago, and I was just seeing how slow going it was for couples to make real change. And I would see them get resistive with one another and defensive. And meanwhile, in my other practice and working with executives, I would see them make these big changes because I had done some things there to enhance the accountability. Well, after using this approach, the last 5 years, I've been seeing them change in ways that I had never seen before in the first 28 years of my practice. And I just feel so, so grateful, and I feel excitement too about it. And so relationship co-coaching is a different way of looking at marriage and romantic love than maybe a lot of listeners are used to. What it is, it's about approaching the relationship from the standpoint that first you need to understand we don't have any of the education or the training. Think about how crazy that is. Nothing of each.
And how,
at least
I
of
say to myself, not to interrupt you, but I say to myself, how could that have happened? I thought we were the best educated. I thought we knew everything. No offense to people, but go on. How could we have missed this?
Well, that's exactly it. So most of us don't really stop and think about it. But this one really powerful, logical fact is there's no training, and we ask more training for a 16-year-old kid to learn how to drive a car, which is far less complex than learning the subtleties of how to navigate living with somebody for your whole life and being married. And so what's wrong with that? It's an indication that our society, in my opinion, is primitive and socially underdeveloped relative to that relationship to relationship social skills. Sure, we're developed and advanced in technology and in material things, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. That's one area of self-actualization. But man, relative to relationships, so couples, all of us need to understand this. It's like somebody throwing us the keys to a 747 Boeing airliner and saying, hey, you know, pop in there and just, I don't have any training, but, you know, you'll be able to do it. Just pull that lever back on the dashboard.
Right.
And so it's a 50-50 chance. And so probably 50-50 chance that probably more chance you're going to crash that plane.
Right.
But 50-50 divorce rate is the second fact. So if we put those two facts together that are indisputable, and we understand, look, we need to start viewing marriage as anything else in society. It is a skill. It's a set of skills. It's a set of best practices. So we have to learn those things.
See, it's funny you use that phrase, best practices. I actually have a sound bite that we use on the air all the time where I pledge to our listening audience. I make a big deal that Starcom is not a mainstream network. And I always say we use best practices in journalism. But when you use the phrase best practices in marriage, I can tell you right now, some of the people I know, and maybe it is me also, as I'm standing here, maybe this is me too, but a lot of people will say, oh, if you have to work at it, that's not the right person for you. Just come on like a magical fairy dust hits you. And then everything fits. Then nobody farts. No one leaves the milk out.
Right.
No one forgets the dog. No one does anything. Why? Because they're in love. And they go, see, that's it. When you find the... And this is, you know, going all the way back to Donahue. How many years have I been on the air? Back in the Donahue days. Back in the Sally, Jesse, Raphael days. Really, in the earliest days of these discussions on the air. I never believed them. I didn't think that was true. I thought marriage, like my parents had 50 years, there was skill and nuance and all kinds of special attention being paid and maybe not even being articulated or said, maybe just being observed, being, you know, when you know somebody in your office and they're going for the copy machine and you're going for the copy machine. Sometimes it's better to let them have the copy machine, have 2 good minutes with them, instead of cutting them off at the pass, giving them a miserable day, get yourself a bad reputation. So that's what I think. And, I haven't even told you how crazy. You mentioned romance before. We got to get deeper into that. Because a skill in romance and a skill set like you were describing just before I barged in here, go right back to it. What are the skills? Well, how can these skills be learned? Because you don't want to think like, oh, I could never do that. This is stuff ordinary people can do, right?
Yeah, there are actually practices, and they're not just skills, but they're practices. There's ways of approaching your partner, even the mental framework. And part of what happens is these beliefs, like you mentioned, like, oh, it shouldn't be that much work, or there must be something wrong with my relationship if we're having this friction. Nobody says to us when we're walking down the aisle, now, here's what you need to expect. The logical developmental phases of falling in love and marriage is you're going to fall in love, feel really wonderful after a couple years, having kids, stress, seeing the negative aspects of one's relationship. Be prepared that you're going to need to bring some of these things to the attention of your partner, and you're going to need to learn how to co-coach them in a respectful way and want to improve and change those things relative to... And this is in contradiction to the belief that a lot of people have in our culture, which they say you don't have to change in relationships. You hear these beliefs, now don't get in a relationship and ask your partner to change. Just accept them the way they are. Or you should just love me unconditionally and accept me the way that I am. Don't ask me to change.
Right.
So this is what I call the doctrine of non-change. So furthermore, the ridiculousness of our society is we don't give anybody the skills, the practices. Nobody knows what they're doing. And then they think they don't have to change.
That's right. You are right.
It's crazy.
I know. I'm telling a PhD he's right. I just want people to witness that. This man is a professional. He studied this, dedicated his life to it. I just told him he was right. So you can see how deluded I am in thinking I know what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, well, I think we're all like this. We all think we kind of got it. And if we just tweak it a little, not at all. How do these skills manifest? How do you wake up one day and go, whoa, here's what I
mean? It's funny. It's the same way that happened to me, waking up as a psychologist and a marriage therapist. I'm licensed both as a psychologist and a marriage and family therapist. I did marriage therapy for 28 years until 5.5 years ago. And just seeing this resistive and the arguments, and it suddenly dawned on me, these couples don't have a really strong sense of an intentional goal of we need to be trying to look at and improve our own behavior, because these beliefs get in the way. I don't have to change. And in fact, there's what I call the projection of control when your partner needs to bring these things to your attention and say, hey, you know, these things I don't like about you.
Wow.
Now it's, oh, don't try to control me. Wow. Oh, you're trying to control me,
right,
and this is
right.
awful. And rather than, hey, what I say it suggests is, change the mentality. We don't have any of the skills. This is like anything else. It requires best practices. Let's enter marriage for the purpose of understanding what we need to do to change. So there's three things that are part of this approach to marriage. Number one is, let's consciously change the negative relationship patterns. We all have them. Rather than getting defensive and arguing that we don't have them, hey, living with somebody, we're all imperfect. So let's find out what they are, identify what they are. I found there's a top 20 that are the most common negative relationship patterns.
Really? Top 20?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, can we hit a couple of those? I'd be afraid to hear them all. I'd have to book a session. I'm going to have to book a session with you.
Some of them are, you know, not listening, interrupting me, too angry, you're not there for me, you're too you're focused upon your cell phone and your computer too much, and there's a variety of them. But a lot of these things are things we all do when under stress or in conflict. But the second piece, the most important piece about this approach, is let's understand what makes a happy marriage or a happy romantic relationship. It's when both of us feel happy and we're both feeling like we're feeling deeply loved. Now, that means that your partner is understanding what your unique love needs are, which are very different. Now, what you think your partner needs.
Yes, tell him, Dr. Tim, yell it from the mountaintops. You know what?
And so,
you know what makes me think when I hear you? You should write a book. And then I realize you have. The book is called A New Approach to Deeper Love, Less Conflict. The genius guru on the phone with us right now, Dr. Tim McCarthy, is showing so much patience and indulgence with me, because as everybody who's listening knows, I have every one of those. What'd you give, about 7 of the top 20? I got them all.
Sure.
I got every one. The interruptions, change the subject, anything but change. Change is a cage. Change restricts me. I can't be who I'm not. Don't you want... Oh, my. You know, do you... Did I tell you I'm 60 years old? Did I tell you that?
No, you didn't.
When I met you, you didn't think I was 60. Nobody thinks I'm 60.
You're very youthful looking.
I act like a lunatic. You know, I'm always bopping around, and I'm always excited about something. And I will tell you, 60 years of age, I'm not a bad-looking guy. You look at me and say, well, there's nothing really wrong with him. He should have been not married one time. How many women have I lived with? I don't want to embarrass you. This is your business. You know what's up. I've lived with 28 women. 28. How many? Did I give enough women a chance? Did I give them a chance? Did I live all over the country? New York, L.A., Chicago, New Orleans, Detroit, Miami. Pick an area. Seattle, Portland. I've lived there. I've dated beautiful, a couple of famous ones, a couple of non-famous. You know, I've tried everything. Tall, you know, big, beautiful women. I tried it all. I can't believe you're on the show, because I have lived through 2 decades of this orthodoxy, and it's kind of a weirdness. You know, you don't want to tell somebody else that they have to do this, that you have to change. That's kind of an imposing declaration. But to be in a relationship with all kinds of arguing and conflict and this and that and problems, and I thought you paid the bill, the lights just went out. You know, we can't even negotiate the mailbox over here. It's crazy.
Yeah.
There you go. So
yeah,
I didn't mean to shock you with my case file, but...
Well, hey, maybe you'll get some telephone calls from some of these past women after the interview.
Listen to you.
Say, hey, you're showing some real change. Maybe we should warm back up.
Hit me up. You know what? I'll put our interview on Facebook, and then I'll make some real gentle Alan Alda kind of sensitive male thing on there. See what happens. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
let's go
we'll
back.
Turn you into a 20. What I say with some of the men that in the couples that I work with, I say, would you like to become a 21st century enlightened man?
Right.
Who's really empathetic and knows how to.
That's
you know,
me. That's
meet
me.
Meet the love needs of a woman.
That's me. Now, here's a line I've heard. You tell me what this means. She goes, you know, I'm not Nancy Reagan. I can't be Nancy Reagan for you. That's heavy. That's heavy, yeah. Right? I'm 60. That's heavy. So what is she saying to me? I think I know what she's saying to me, but she says, I can't be Nancy Reagan for you.
Well, I think I'd have to know more of the context behind that
comment.
Oh, come
on. You're being kind. You're just being sweet. Now you're being too nice. You should let it loose here. Look, that's the line. Like, I can't watch out for you, tell you to do this, tell you to have a nice day, give you a hot bowl of soup when you need it, talk to you before you go. I'm flying halfway around the world like Hillary Clinton. I'm Secretary of State or something. That's what that means. I'm not having my life to make your life better. That's not why I'm here. I'm not here to make your life better. If you're not happy, don't blame me. I'm not Nancy Reagan. Run to the, are you okay, Ronnie? How's everything today, Ronnie? Have a great day. You're the best president in the world, Ronnie. Who doesn't love that when you walk out the door?
Sure.
Well, I don't do that. If you're looking for that, Now, what do you do when you're in love with somebody and now you start finding out, I don't want to do stuff that would make you happy? I don't want to do something.
Yeah, that's where you got to start. You got to look inside at yourself and look at, now with these 28 other relationships, have I been successful in using that individualistic approach that is commonly accepted in our society, which is it's about don't infringe upon me. The problem is that's an individualistic, self-centered approach of romantic love that permeates our whole society. It's all about sex, 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 this. It's
right.
About me.
Right.
Rather than an approach of, okay, enter marriage for the purpose of self-actualizing as a human being. And that means that entails learning how to love unselfishly. Now, actually, it's not that hard. Once you begin to actually experience that part of yourself where you look out for the other person you've been looking at and you inquire, what do you need to feel deeply loved? So here's the simplicity of it. And this is what came to me 5.5 years ago. People are unhappy in their marriage because their love needs aren't being met.
Right.
So let's expand the way we look at marriage, enter it for the purpose of finding out. So tell me, what do you need to feel deeply loved? Well, I need more positivity. Well, what does that mean? So then you inquire positivity.
Right.
Well, that means I'd like for you. Some people are real negative, so they go around, they complain, and they're talking about negative things all the time. Say, I would appreciate it if you wouldn't be so negative about things with me, and you're too critical with me. You're too negative about other people. You're reactive. Or maybe it's that they have anger that comes out. They're impatient and angry,
right,
and they speak to you
right
in a way that the woman or the man feels disrespected. So all of those are the little subtle things that we do, because and changing those things makes us a better person. So
well, this is what I try to get across. But I wish really if I could fly you in at 2 a.m. once in a while on these long distance calls. The whole thing here is exactly that. You're suggesting this will help you in all areas of life, right? This is an upgrade.
That's very interesting. I see a crossover.
Right.
Women who are unhappy with a man because he's too aggressive with him in the way he speaks with him, too impatient because he's that way in the boardroom, he's that way in business. And now she's saying to him, look, I'm my feelings of romantic love are waning, and I don't want to have sex as often with you because I don't feel like you respect me.
Right.
And
boom.
That, and so if you look in the boardroom, if you look
right
in the business, sometimes
right
the same behavior is there, the carryover. Here's the thing. The problem is, and this is the third part of this approach with couples, of helping them learn how to resolve conflict in a respectful way, learning how to talk in not using an aggressive voice tone or words, and not using generalizations. The two causes finally came to me. The two causes for all conflict and all the couples I'd seen in the first 28 years of working with them was they used an aggressive voice tone. It doesn't have to be screaming or yelling.
No.
It can be, well, you made me do this. The accusatory tone, the blaming tone.
Always.
The slight
always
elevation of tone. All of this is backed up on science. Even now, but it's just not well articulated. The research
right
shows that couples who are more unselfish in love have higher marriage satisfaction, have happier relationships. Number two, other research shows that if you try to meet the bid of your partner, and that the higher the frequency of that, couples who are happy, they're meeting the bids. They're listening. They're responding to what those needs are, and those that are unhappy and who are more likely to divorce are not doing it. Same thing over here with handling conflict. The research shows that those who are harsh, using a harsh startup in the way that you speak when you start to talk about a conflict and you're doing it in a way that is escalating, that creates more conflict, and that is associated with more problems and a higher predictability of divorce. Contemptuousness, criticism, defensive. So why don't we teach this to people? Why don't we teach these best practices and help people soften? The key is what's called softening, learning to speak in a respectful way. Don't go to the anger. I teach couples to go to the vulnerable feelings. I feel hurt when you use that angry tone with me. Please talk to me in a nice way.
Right.
Rather than screaming, there you go again, you're doing this, you never love me, you're just so blah, blah, blah,
that's
blah,
it.
Blah.
That's the way, I was trying to get that one in, and you got it at the end. There's always that line, oh, here we go again. It's always like, and you go, what are you, whoa, let's not lose control here. This could be
that's
different,
right.
This could be the path out of here. It was like my dad when he would look for an exit in those big parking lots. Now you can't get out there. Now you can't get out. And then we'd miss one. And my mother would go, you know, we could have gotten out there. You know what I mean? You're so predisposed to not see a good thing. Here's one. You're like, Ed, enough. I'll give you one more. You use the example about being negative, positivity, negativity. Most people who start out, when they hear a new idea or some new information, start out with no, because, and you have to tell them that, and you can be the bad guy. What do you mean? What do you criticize? I said, but did you hear yourself? Your first thought was negative. This idea never had a chance. So how do you know when you, if you're in the position of informing your partner, how will you know that you're pushing too hard on this? I mean, let's say you want to give this book to somebody. You put it under the pillow or something, you know, you hide it in the negligee drawer, and she goes, what's this doing in here? And then, you know, how do you know?
That's a very good question. And, you know, what I said, there's a variety of ways of approaching this. Number one is just tell your partner you'd like to have a really great relationship, and let's try to learn some things to do it. And here's a book that you may want to look at. What I say to everybody and all the listeners is, set the goal to have a really extraordinary relationship and marriage. Just set the goal like you would anything else in life, and then learn the practices to do it. And, you know, don't expect to have an extraordinary relationship or become an extraordinary professional at whatever your job is unless you do a little bit of learning. And the great thing is, this doesn't require as much learning or education as it does to go to school and learn the sort of academic things. But so, you know, just talk in a sincere way with your partner and say, let's approach this from a different angle. Let's try to improve. Let's find out what the things are that we don't like in the relationship. Let's commit to unselfish love. And, you know, hey, read this book. Or, you know, what I also, as a first step for couples, what I say is, and I offer a free extraordinary relationship self-evaluation on my website. For anybody just to go there, you can download it, and it's got a series of four different categories of a relationship, including your level of closeness, your communication effectiveness, how you handle conflict, and how you build positivity and love, your love-building practices. And I say, just sit down, you know, download this, go through there. It's not a scientific test to compare you against other couples. It's about having the conversation and really looking at, here are the things that go into a really great relationship. How well do we do them? And just have a conversation and just talk. And then if you want more information, yeah, it'll be great. Go on my website and go to the book. The book is on Amazon, but you can quickly go to it at drtimmccarthy.com, which is my website. And read other books too, and really make it a life goal to self-actualize and have a really great marriage.
That's what I think. I think it's it's just like playing tennis. You just enjoy it. You know, you like to. You know, I'll tell you. I picked up on some things when I was a kid. My mom and dad had their little rituals that they really looked forward to. you know, on Saturday, there's coffee out there. The crumb buns are right in the house from the bakery, you know, before the other one realizes it. It's not work. You know what I mean? People go, oh, you know, everything I do is work. When I come home, I don't want to work. I'm a, you know, there's joy. There's joyful work. This is terrific. I really appreciate your time today. I want to share with people, if you don't mind, what some people have been saying about the book. It's really pretty terrific, the reviews you're getting. Reading this book is like having a conversation with a compassionate, wise, and innovative therapist. Boy, we did that with you today. That's Bill Dougherty, the author of Take Back Your Marriage. But you and I today on the air really broken some ground. Do you mind being kind of a therapist friend of the show? And we'll have you back on as I have adversities or the listeners do?
Absolutely. I'd love to do that.
You're like, oh, boy. What am I getting involved in with this crazy Ed Till? The book is Relationship Co-Coaching, A New Approach to Deeper Love, Less Conflict, Challenging Society's Beliefs About Romance and Marriage, Dr. Timothy McCarthy. Dr. Tim McCarthy, what a pleasure. The website, drtimmccarthy.com. I look forward to your next visit. Have a great week. So, you know, you're an eternal optimist. I've already been transitioning out, but I have to just throw in one more question here. You seem to have a remarkable buoyancy that you are a remarkably optimistic, positive person. Has that informed your work in this difficult area?
It does. You know, I've always been an idealist and an optimist, and I'm a happy person. One time I had a couple that I was seeing. The guy was, his wife said, "Hey, write the check for him." And it was like at session 10, and he said, "I'm sorry, I don't remember your name." And his wife said, "What?" And he says, "Well, I call you Mr. Happy at home."
Ah, there you go. Great job, Dr. Tim McCarthy, Ed Till Show, StarCom Radio Network. Thank you, sir. It's true, right? I'm a confessed right here addict. I'm addicted to love 28 times. Hey, some people like wine. I like romance. I don't do anything online. I have to confess. You know how many times my friends are like, dude, you should be hooking up online, you know, in the middle of the night online. I'm like, you know what? I've tried. First of all, nothing happened. I did put up a little picture of myself. Nothing. Zero. But I will tell you, I was terrified the whole time I was there. But put me in a dive bar with a $20 bill and an interesting woman, I will show you romance for years. I just like people. It's crazy, man.